Brilliance Audio presents Now It's Time to Say Goodbye by Dale Peck. Performed by Andrew Iden, Angelo DiLoretto, Adenrale Ojo, Carly Robbins, J.D. Jackson, Joyce Bean, Patrick Lawler, and Ron Butler.
Part 1. 1-1. Justin. If it's after midnight, it's my birthday. I once picked up a novel that started that way, but before I could read more than a few lines, something distracted me. Though I remember the bookstore, which is closed now, and the distraction, he was about 6'3". I don't remember anything else about the novel, neither title nor author nor what came next. But even so, I've never forgotten that line. I don't know why. If it's after midnight, it's my birthday. Evocative, maybe, but also pretty meaningless. Still, it stayed with me, popped into my head from time to time, and shortly after I left Galatea, it came to me again. During my year there, I was witness to one rape, several murders, and something that, context aside, I can only call a riot. But in 12 months, not one single person celebrated a birthday. No, only the town observed its birthday. Only the town, as Rosemary Krebs insisted all along, was important. And with that in mind, I feel safe in saying that the story you are about to read is the story of a place, not a person. It is like a parade, though one marcher after another will step forward and claim to be the star. It is, in the end, the spectacle of stardom itself that lingers in the memory. And so I, first on, will now step aside, first off. But I leave this impression with you, a palimpsest that lingers behind the remainder of these words. If it's after midnight, it's my birthday. In a way, I am striking a bargain with you. If you can make that one sentence mean something, then I promise to take care of everything else.
1-2. Melvin Cartwright. He opened his eyes. The porch light's glow pulsed through rain sluicing down his bedroom window. His eyes had their picket things to choose from. The mirror on the wall, the stack of read and reread detective novels in the corner, the photographs of his parents and sister. But they settled finally on the painting of Jesus he had made in Bible camp when he was 8 years old. The rain-soaked light caused the Savior's heaven-gazing eyes to cry shadows of tears. The phone rang again. He knew before he answered what it would be. Not who, what. Wasn't no other reason for someone to call at such an ungodly hour. He picked up the receiver, held it to his ear without speaking. A pause, and then a quiet voice came over the line.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave.
Melvin bit back a sound, at once a laugh and a gasp. The laughter was for the silliness of the code. The gasp was a gasp of shock and acknowledgement. It couldn't be. But it had to be. It was. He composed his voice as much as possible.
His truth is marching on.
When the voice spoke again, it was in a more familiar tone. The exhortatory boom that could make a request for a glass of iced tea sound like a divine summons.
"Was down at Cora's kitchen earlier this evening," the voice said. "Have some of that stew?" Melvin said. "I did indeed." "Had some myself," Melvin said.
He paused for a moment, amazed at how easy this was, how natural it seemed. Scripted. Scripted is not a word he would have used. Melvin cleared his throat.
"Mighty good stew," he said.
"Indeed," the voice said again. And in a word, ambrosial status.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?